As we continue last week's discussion, we will learn more from Ray Kong about how living clays can provide a much-needed balance of minerals to our more often than not nutrient-deficient diets. Human bodies are meant and built to be fully self-contained processing plants, but nutrition is key. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Just zipping through this time here, and I know a lot of people in our audience have either done a colon cleanse with clay or they've heard about it for colon cleansing. And this is indeed, you know, not many could really argue the fact that if you do have a clean digestive system, then the rest of your body will probably follow suit and be extremely healthy. But there's really so much more to it than that.
There is. Well, number one, clay is used as needed. Again, there are very few elements or items or compound on Earth that works the way clay does.
Right. Ozone works similarly to that.
Yes.
In that way.
There are a few. However, the benefits that clay brings to our body are quite broad, and our digestive tract is one of the areas that it really excels. It not only cleanses the colon, but it detoxifies. The cleansing action primarily it's like scrubbing, if you will. Clay has it's like a grit, if you will, and when eaten, as the clay combined with our food passes through our digestive tract, it does scrub. And in today's world, with all the chemicals in the environment and in our food, the herbicides, the pesticides, the fungicides, the insecticides, the hormones, the chlorine in the water, and all these chemicals that are in our body, we do need to detoxify. But what happens is in our small intestine, as well as our large, but our total digestive tract, we build up a thicker mucous membrane, which is one of our defense mechanisms to protect ourselves from many of these harmful chemicals. With fish, is called a slime coat. When you put fish into dirty or toxic waters, nature says, hey, this is dirty water. I'm going to give them a little defense, and their mucous membrane or slime coat thickens. Well, the same thing happens with animals and people. We build up a thicker mucous membrane in our intestines than we normally would, and as a result, it inhibits our ability to efficiently digest and absorb the nutrients in our food. And over decades of life, this becomes very apparent in terms of health problems, even diabetes and digestive tract disorders and many, many other things, blood imbalances, and our inability to fully absorb the nutrients in our food could be very debilitating. Take osteoporosis as an example. If you cannot get the calcium from the food that you normally eat into your bloodstream to nourish our various tissues, then over time, osteoporosis is arthritis and various skeletal disorders are very not only painful, but debilitating. So there are many reasons why clay that cleans our digestive tract makes us simply healthier through the ability to absorb the nutrients in our foods more efficiently, more fully. You add to that the fact that a lot of the foods that we eat today are many times depleted in a lot of the nutrients simply because of soil depletion. And if I can touch for a minute on this, Robin, I know we can get into a lot of areas of health, but when you take the simple fact that soil depletion is rampant in today's world as a result of one thing, and that's our population. In the last 30 years, which is a very short period of time, the population of our planet has doubled from roughly 3 billion to over 6.3 or 6.4 billion today. That's a lot of people. So we're making more people, but we're not making more real estate. We're not making more farmland, agriculture. We still grow the same We farm and grow fruits and vegetables from the same farmlands throughout the world, and we don't do it in the desert where there's no water. We don't do it in the mountains where you can't farm. So the same agricultural farmlands are feeding the world over close to 6.5 billion people. What this does, it depletes the soil. Any soil in the United States today must have chemicals in it to have the growth that it had 100 years ago. An example, the famous Idaho potatoes, 50 years ago, 3 to 4 pounds, very high in nutrition, very sweet tasting. Today, they're less than 2 pounds. So what they did 45 years ago, they rotated the crops and they alternated the growth of various plants to heal the soil. And then they did it every 3 years. Now it's every 4 years. Instead of being 3 and 4 pounds, they're less than 2 pounds. But there's a direct correlation between the lack of flavor in many of the fruits and vegetables that we eat today and the lack of nutrition. Typically, the blander the fruit or vegetable, the lower the nutritional value. So man steps in and puts in chemical fertilizers. Chemical fertilizers are usually made of a petrochemical byproduct, crude oil. And if you go to any garden supply where you can buy fertilizer, and you flip over the bag and look at the back, you'll see three letters, or three sets of numbers that equal three letters. You'll see three sets of numbers, and they represent N, P, and K, which is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. Now, when you mix these three things together and you put it into the ground, things grow like crazy. It'll turn your grass green in a couple of weeks. It'll make your fruits and vegetables grow like crazy. It's like giving a steroid or various hormones to a chicken or a cow.
Yes, good analogy.
So we're giving these chemicals to the ground. Now, farmers get paid by the pound. The larger their fruit, the heavier it weighs, the more money they make. But what happens is when we artificially induce growth faster than nature intended, you end up with a fruit or vegetable that has a lot of water in it. That's why they're bland. But they're heavy, and they weigh a lot, and they look great. We buy them, we eat them, but it's lacking in nutrition. This leads to many other maladies in today's world. As we eat these foods, we fill our stomach, we physically become satisfied, but nutritionally, there is a deficit. Over time, this catches up with us. And that simple fact is what causes, or what the food companies make millions, if not billions of dollars on. They know that if you're nutritionally deficient, you will be hungry and you will nibble, which is why there are so many companies that make, you know, junk foods, the potato chips and the candies and all the junk food we eat today, because you will be a little hungrier than you would normally be if you were nutritionally satisfied. And as a result, we nibble. And as a result, we get heavier than we should. And as a result, we are not as healthy as we should be. So it leads to many disorders in today's world that wasn't around 50 and 100 years ago simply because of soil depletion.
Yes. Now, you have a wonderful story about the astronauts. Now, I had heard that it is true when you spend time in outer space that it can wreak havoc with your bones.
Exactly. Well, what happened was in the early 60s, when we were in the middle of the Cold War with the Russians, and we were trying to beat them to the moon. The astronauts initially went to outer space for 1 or 2 days, and then eventually 1 or 2 weeks, and eventually later a month or two. And after the space flight became extended, after 2 months, 60 or more days, they noticed when the astronauts came back, obviously they do tremendous physical exams on them, and they really, you know, check out their bodies. One of the things they noticed was osteoporosis. And when the flights became extended to 4 to 6 months or longer, they had up to 20% bone loss. Why? Because there's no gravity in space. And Mother Nature does have a rule, and that is use it or lose it. So without the gravity pulling down your skeletal, Mother Nature says, well, you don't need these big old thick bones. So we start losing bone density. It was alarming because these are, you know, people in their prime, fit, very fit physical specimens of human beings, and yet they had tremendous bone loss. So what does the richest country in the world do? They go to the pharmaceutical companies, Eli Lilly, Warner Lambert, Johnson & Johnson, and Pfizer. This is making some calcium to reverse this osteoporosis problem with our astronauts. Well, they made this calcium, the finest, purest they could find and make, gave it to the astronauts, and it simply did not work. So the federal government set out to do a study on the highest absorbable form of calcium, because obviously the calcium was being ingested, but it was not being absorbed. And that's one of the problems with factory-made or prescription drugs. We must take more than we normally should because very little of it gets absorbed into our bloodstream. That's why many times the side effects and the toxicity of taking this enormous amount become very harmful for us. And the side effects sometimes are worse than the problem you're trying to cure. So when you take a simple natural product that may not be 100% calcium, but it's almost 100% absorbable.
Well, the truth is, we need more than calcium for the bones. That's not really what's going on.
No, that's true. There are many others, like, again, like the ingredient in a cake. It has to be the right mix of iron and phosphorus and zinc and calcium, because clay is a compound. And when you mix two elements together on the periodic table, everything on Earth, you know, that we know has a number or is known as one of the elements on the periodic table. But taking a simple analogy of mixing two elements and coming up with something else is mixing hydrogen, which is very volatile. You make bombs out of it and hopefully, you know, fuel the cars of the future with it. And you mix it with oxygen, you end up with water. Totally different than the two individual elements separately. So when you take all the elements in clay, which roughly 60, 70, sometimes 100, these elements mix together, form a compound. That compound we know is clay. But when ingested, these various compounds become very beneficial to our bodies in terms of replenishing, you know, and nourishing our cells and our tissues, of which calcium is one of them. But again, clay works as needed. If you need the calcium, you'll use it. If you don't need it, it simply passes through your system.
Right, and
very safely.
So we did get the astronauts taking clay, is that correct?
Correct.
Did they take it before they left or
before
after?
Before and during.
And during.
Yeah, there is a report that we have on a study funded by NASA, and the study was done at Caltech University in Pasadena, California, whereby our clay was chosen over seven other clays. They call them Western bentonites. They even looked at coral calcium. This is 45 years ago. And, close to 50 years ago. And they passed on most of them because they found that the particle size of our clay was among the finest in the world, not to mention North America. Well, they simply took the clay. They call them mud pies. In fact, I've got articles from the LA Times, the Houston Chronicle, the Examiner, and various newspapers of those in those years, where it talked about astronauts ingesting mud and getting a big laugh out of it. But it worked. That's the main thing. It did work, and that's what they needed to fortify their bodies with the proper amount of nutrients, of which calcium was one of them, to reverse the effects of accelerated osteoporosis.
Now, Ray, we've spoken privately before about, and you definitely hit upon the issue of the fact that the living clay is a compound. It's made up of different things. And I know some people who think about the clay, they're so afraid or freaked out if there's aluminum in there, because we all know aluminum is not something good. It's purported to be a big cause of Alzheimer's and many other problems in the body, same with heavy lead poisoning or something like that. Now, chemically speaking, how would a test be able to differentiate between a clay that is a compound of all these certain elements and one that maybe has been tainted due to pollution or toxic waste or something like that?
Well, first of all, clay or earth in this natural form is not toxic. And what makes it toxic is the major difference and leads to a lot of confusion and misunderstanding. When we process earth and we extract from this earth the various metals that we use in industry, like making an airplane, the aluminum in an airplane is not the same as the aluminum in the ground. The lead in paint is not the same as lead in the ground. It's this processing, extracting, and refining process that makes it toxic. We change the molecular structure of the aluminum, of the lead, and all the other minerals when we refine it. After it's refined, it becomes toxic. In nature, it is not. If you were to, again, take a spoonful of earth from your backyard, you will see aluminum in it. You'll see lead in it. This is what the earth's crust is made of. And this is the same earth that that lettuce or that apple that you ate grew in.
Right.
And obviously through plant root nutrient uptake, whatever is in the soil is in that fruit or vegetable.
Right.
And after eating it, it's in your body. Totally different form. It is not the same when it's refined.
That right. So if there was, say you had a good clay mine over in Section A, but then right next door in Section B, there was some kind of old lead or something thrown out, that would show up if they got mixed together?
Well, if you analyze it chemically, it probably, depending on the amount, it would show up. There are many type of tests for clay mineralogy. One of them is called atomic absorption, or ICP, inductive coupled plasma. There are many techniques in analyzing minerals, and depending on the type of mineral and what you're looking for, but yes, they will show up, and they are different. Because when it's refined, like the lead in your example, it's clearly a different element than the lead that's in the ground or the aluminum.
Yes.
When it's refined, it is totally, totally different.
Very good.
Molecularly, atomically, structurally, totally different. And that's what gives it its toxicity or makes it toxic.
Yes.
So it clearly is different as night and day.
Now, Ray, you were not born into a clay mining family, and somewhere in your history, you happened upon clay. And I'm wondering if you could just give us a brief introduction to your introduction and why it just hit you that this is something you wanted to be involved in personally in your own life.
Okay, well, I may not have been born into a clay mining family, but I was close. I had a dear high school friend who was my partner when I was in junior high school. And my friend, uncle, his name is Harry Hibbard, owned this clay mine. What happened was in California after World War II, primarily the years 1946, 1947, when thousands of, if not millions of GIs that came home and survived World War II, set upon various vocations. And in those days, to get our economy going after this tremendous war, the government set out to do various projects like the TVA in Tennessee and in the western United States in California. The Feather River Project was rumored to bring water from Northern California that had abundance of water to Southern California that was growing and dry and devoid of a lot of water. So that would bring a lot of people, you know, to California to work for this federal project. Well, it did take place, but what happened was it was rumored that this water that would be brought from Northern California to Southern California would create a vast agricultural farmland in Imperial County, which is down by the Mexican border along the Colorado River Delta, where our mine is. And in those days, people would go out and buy desert property in the hopes that someday it would be aquified and become a major agricultural area like, you know, the heartland of America or the San Joaquin Valley and various other large farmlands. So the Hibbard family set out to do exactly that. They went out and bought this acreage in the middle of this desert for a very small amount of money, and then hope that sooner or later water would come down there and it'll be a breadbasket of another breadbasket of our country. Well, it took about 25 years for this to happen. And in those lean early years when our economy was, you know, coming back from the war economy, they would lease out the property to grazing for grazing rights for cattle and various other sheep and animals to graze on. Well, they would notice after letting cattle out at the end of a dirt road 3 or 4 miles away, after a few days, these animals, grazing animals, would be congregated in this one hilly area eating earth, eating dirt. And for many years, this observation took place, and they thought, well, they're just animals. What do they know? Well, this happened year after year. And then they noticed rabbits and quail and wild birds from the migratory flyway, Pacific flyway, eating the earth in this one hill area.
You know, I just want to break in and say one thing here, that lots of times animals, I know the blue macaws, for instance, will eat a poisonous seed of sorts, but they'll also eat the clay, and then the poison is absorbed immediately so it doesn't harm.
Exactly. Well, to divert from my story a little bit, about a month ago, Animal Planet and Discovery Channel flew three people from New Zealand to film me at my mine. And we drove down to the mine, and it showed me driving up and then opening up the back of the truck and getting a shovel and then going to this this little cut that we have where we have rock and prying out the rock. And then they did a close-up of me holding this piece of rock, and then I'm eating it. Well, the same film crew from New Zealand, which is quite a ways to Los Angeles, went to Peru, and they film blue macaws. The exotic bird that ate a toxic berry that normally would kill them. And after eating these berries, they would fly to the side of a mountain. It's been aired many times on National Geographic. I don't know if you've seen it or not. They would fly to the side of a mountain and eat clay along this one strata. And then from there, they would fly down to the river to water, and that was their cycle. Every day they would do this. Again, the same film crew went to Africa, and in Africa, they observed elephants that would walk 1.5 to 2 days out of the jungle, through the valleys and into the mountains to ingest clay. In fact, where they observed these elephants eating clay, they're not huge caves. They would then gouge out chunks of clay with their tusks and eat it, and over time, these areas where they eat are tunnels. So they crawl in there with infrared cameras and observe these huge animals ingesting clay. And then they would back out of these tunnels and then walk another day and a half down to their feeding grounds out of the mountains. So many animals were observed doing that, and obviously it's the detoxification that they were looking for in the clay to cleanse their body and detoxify. Many times we'll observe our dog or cat eating grass. Well, many reasons why animals do this, of which one of them is to detoxify. Another one is to get the nutrients that are not in their food, because, like you said, animals have an instinct. We do not. And they must self-medicate to maintain health.
Right. Well, I think you've had an instinct. You were led to the clay, and you took
well,
it
going
in.
Well, going back to the story,
yes.
And so when the Feather River Project was finally brought water from Northern California down to Southern California, the area that our mine is located at was higher in elevation than the water would flow. So the Hebbard family that owned the property started mining it after observing all these animals eating it, and it ultimately took soil samples to UC Davis, which is the finest soil science school in our country. And the second one is Texas A&M. So the two universities, Dr. Quisenberry and Dr. Urshaw, collaborated with their analyzing our clay and did many, many studies, of which one of them was atomic absorption, X-ray diffraction, ICP, inductive coupled plasma, many, many tests. And then they found out why, because then they found out what was in it. And they found those three elements, the three things that we mentioned, the correct mix of the elements on the periodic table, the correct particle size for absorption, and the high negative charge. Now, how animals know this, I don't know. I don't know if anybody knows. But they have this instinct, and they simply did know. And they do this today as we speak. This is one of the reasons animals migrate, to get the different nutrients in their bodies to maintain their health. Because, again, animals must be strong, nimble, quick, alert, healthy to stay alive. So that's basically how I got involved, simply by meeting somebody when I was 14 years old, and then I got involved because Harry Hebert, who originally owned the mine from the 1940s, took this clay after watching the animals and then tested it on dairy farmers in Imperial County, California. After mixing it with the alfalfa and the molasses, they tried 2, 3, 4, 7, 12, and 15% by weight, and they kept, you know, monitoring the cattle, and they noticed that the butterfat content of the milk would go way off the scale, which is one of the measurements of quality milk.
Definitely, yes.
Yeah, and then they noticed that they ate less and gained weight faster. The young cattle would grow faster. Then they tried it with chickens and poultry, other various poultry. So it's been tested on many, many animals, clinical trials. And this is what led NASA to say, well, let's take a look at it. And that's what led NASA to doing it. So that's how I got involved. And then over the years, I've been eating clay every day for, over 25, maybe 35 years, every day. I will not go a day in my life without eating it.
It's interesting. Since I found an interest in myself for clay, I've spoken to a lot of people who, the ones that are really into clay, they'll skip a supplement, they'll skip a vitamin, they'll skip a meal, but nobody misses their clay in their day.
And I'm one of them.
Yes. Well, Ray, this is a pleasure. I appreciate so much your expertise and your stories, and I'd like to let people know where they can find your clay.
Well, the name of our company is California Earth Minerals, californiaearthminerals.com. The name of our clay for ingesting is Terra Min. Terra, the Latin word for earth, Min, the short for mineral. In fact, terramin.com will take you right to it. We have it in tablet form. We have it in powder form. And we have it in the various sizes and packages. We sell it from 1 pound to 1 ton. So that's what we do. We make an edible-grade calcium montmorillonite clay. And it has been on the market for over 50 years.
Many thanks to Ray Kong for sharing such great, tried and true common sense healthcare information. For any guest information, to listen to archives, share resources, and sign up for weekly programming, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. For podcasting on iTunes, Tributaries Radio. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.